Lineup Logic. You're listening to The Sweet Spot. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. With me, as always, Alex Remezowski. How you doing, Alex? Back from your solo week.
Back from my solo week. I'm happy to have you back. It was a good experience. It was, you know, I had to accept the challenge with open arms, and I hope some people listen to it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I a couple laughs. You had a good time with the sound effects.
I've never had access to the sound effects. I love them.
Yeah, they only give them to you on the demo, so they go away after like two episodes.
See, that's how I know you really listen to it.
Right. But yeah, you know, it was a mixed bag last week. Francesco Molinari kind of, I won't say he ran away with it, but pretty commanding victory there.
Yeah, you know, just earlier today, I went back and listened to myself, which I absolutely hate doing, because I had to know what I said about Molinari, and because it was pretty disappointing, at least DraftKings, actually all around, I was pretty much completely off of him, and it wasn't that I was off of him because I didn't think he was going to do what he did. It was more that there was better value all around. And last week was a weird week, like we'll see this week in terms of especially fantasy pricing, where you're seeing some of these guys priced way above what you might think they should be priced. And he was a good example of that, but we knew he's a ball striker. We knew he's someone that can score on par fours and keep it consistent on a tough golf course. And he was just kind of hanging in there toward the top all week. And then Sunday just absolutely took over. Like, that was a wild round to watch. Like, the guy just didn't make any mistakes. Nope. It was like he had this lead, and people, like, on TV, they would be like, oh, so he'll probably just aim for the front of the green here, like no need to do anything crazy. And no, he'd fly it over the thick rough, over the water, over the bunker, and land it 3 feet from the hole, and it would just stop. Like, it was just birdie after birdie. It was draining some ridiculous putts.
Yeah, put it well.
Yeah, the putts were crazy. Right when I turned it on, when I finally got to a TV on Sunday, he was on the 10th hole next to Abe Anser, pretty much both overshot that super long two-tiered par five green, and Molinari goes, or no, Anser went first and left it a little short, and then Molinari just drains this like 70 footer for eagle, and it was then like, oh, I'm glad I got to a TV so I could watch. I think I had bets on every single person that came in second through 12th. So, honestly, going into Sunday, it was like, if Francesco Molinari does not win this tournament, I'm going to be looking pretty good today.
Yeah.
And that's DraftKings included. Like, I was able to cash without him on actually both sites. So
nice.
Overall, yeah, I mean,
it's 62 on Sunday was pretty impressive.
It was very impressive.
My other takeaway, well, couple things. One, you were on Brian Gay pretty strongly. He had a pretty nice tournament there, T8.
Yeah.
And then Bo Hossler, yeah, he was in and out of it, but we've seen him pop a few times. Yeah, he's a young guy. He's 23 years old. I think he's going to be a stud on tour. Big dude, hits the ball far.
Yeah, I agree. Just watching him out there, it was like he looked like he belonged there.
Yeah. And then lastly, you got Sung Kang cheating his way to a third place finish. What happened there?
You know, I'm still actually pretty unclear on that. I keep seeing it here and there, and it's like, it sounds like a whoever you want to believe, a he said, she said type deal, as far as I know. It's not on camera. It was Joel Dahman and Sung Kang and whoever was a rules official. Yeah. And it was something about hitting in a hazard and dropping and whether it...
I mean, there's no video of it yet, but the shot tracker is like... You look where it tracked his ball and where he took his drop from, like they're not even close together. It seems like the rules official just basically said, well, whatever you say, we'll let you turn that card in. And there's nothing to dispute it because, you know, like you said on Twitter, all the cameras were on Tiger and nobody was paying attention to these guys. So that, you know, Dahman's basically jumping up and down saying, you know, he's giving himself like a couple hundred yards here. That's that should not be allowed. And you know, 25-minute delay. You don't see that very often. Another group actually played through them.
Yeah, that's what I said. You don't see, that's how it like got mentioned. I think that's how Joel Dahman actually ended up.
Yeah, he didn't come out and put him on blast. Somebody asked, said, you know, what was the holdup at 10? You guys, you know, had a 25-minute delay there. And
yeah.
I think they knew.
It's not very often on tour that a group plays through another group. Like something must have been done. It was a great question to ask.
There's plenty of people who would like to play through certain groups, but.
Yeah, especially lately. It's been all the talk on tour, but. Yeah, so, I mean, even with that said, like, there were some really interesting names up there. It was kind of more or less who you expected, what I kind of preached last week was, like, you got to get 6 of 6 because the cut's not going to be very significant, and it was not. If you look at the final leaderboard, like, there really aren't many names to even talk about who missed the cut. JB Holmes was one of them, which... I ultimately ended up fading, but I know I was talking about him quite a bit. But the guy's just been playing great. We'll have another chance to talk about him here. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's like Siwoo Kim, who I randomly put in a couple lineups and full-on regretted it. Really not much to talk about in terms of that. Jamie Lovemark imploding for an 82 on Sunday with the most horrendous back nine ever.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy. I have no clue what happened there. Kind of scary going into this week. You know, I actually, one person I want to shout out is someone I know you like quite a bit. Ryan Armour, who finished in lone second place.
That's nuts for him. Like, if he breaks 50th, it's like noteworthy.
I know, but the guy, he like seems to hang in there this year.
Uh-huh.
And when I was building lineups late Wednesday night, I'm looking for some value to put in there. And when you just glance over really like his game log, what the average person will see scrolling through DraftKings, I was like, you know, he might be able to do okay here. Mm. And I put him in a couple lineups, and like, man, that was one of those things that really, I think, propelled me towards some money. But between him and like Hostler and Brian Gay all being top 10, if I had some Francesco Molinari, that would have been nice. But, you know, maybe someone to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it was a weird week for me. I only built 2 DraftKings lineups, and they both got 6 for 6 through, and neither cashed. It was like... I was solidly at the cut line with Ed Lovemark in the one. You know, he kind of ruined it for me. A lot of Jimmy Walker. I think I had him in both. He kind of shot me in the foot. But a little better on draft.com where I wasn't afraid of guys like Tiger and Molinari with no ownership concerns.
Yep.
All right, let's gear into this week. Going to West Virginia for the Greenbrier, whatever it's being called this year, salute to military something or other. So hit us with what we got at the Greenbrier.
Yeah, so this is the Greenbrier Classic, aka this year, 2018, a military tribute at the Greenbrier. The Greenbrier is in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. It's a little community, one would say, that Phil Mickelson likes to promote on television. Google the commercials. They're kind of funny. You know, it's just Phil Mickelson and his advisor talking about how great the Greenbrier property is. Him and Bubba Watson, I believe, both own property there. Some people will probably say they live there. I'm sure they don't really live there, but they can play golf there whenever they want. That's probably definitely true. Right. So the course is the Old White TPC. It's just under 7,300 yards. It's par 70. Working with another par 70 like last week, not too long. It's been the host of the Greenbrier Classic since 2010 when this tournament replaced the Buick Open. If you're looking through course history, you're going to notice that 2016 did not happen. That was because the course was underwater. I talked about this a little last year, I remember. Mm-hmm. They redid it, but basically it emulates what it was before. Not that much has changed in the past few years. Before that, the course has gone through some more significant changes. The front nine is a par 34, which is very interesting. The back nine is a par 36. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a difficult week in terms of choosing a type of player to fit the golf course. It's pretty generally accepted that just about any type of player could win here.
Yeah.
So I think there's some stats that I want to kind of zero in on here. Last year, Xander Schauffele ended up winning over Robert Streb, who has had some very, very good course history here. So it was Xander's first year. He was a first-year pro, and so it was quite the win for him. Coming down the stretch, he really closed out in a pretty decent fashion with a birdie on the last hole. Robert Streb, as we know, is kind of one of your short knockers. He's going to be keeping the ball straight. Xander can hit the ball miles, so it's kind of like opposite sides of the spectrum here. Both can have success at the golf course. We've got some Ted Potter in the past, some Jonas Blixt, Danny Lee, Jimmy Walker. Like, there's just the names are kind of all over the place for what we've seen at the golf course. Bent grass greens, they're going to be pretty quick. The rough's not that crazy. You should be able to hit it a mile off the tee. High altitude, the ball is going to carry. So it's going to play even shorter than 7,300 yards. So you're not going to have to smash driver, but you're obviously going to be tempted to because there's not a ton of trouble. So it's really going to be about making birdies, avoiding large mistakes. And then par four scoring is always big with a par 70. There's six par fours between 400 and 450 yards. Only two par fives. They're both pretty long, 568 and 616. And then the par threes are, three of them are over 200. Pretty much two of them over 230. And then you got one at 177. So it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a play your guys week because, like you said, there's not one particular type or stat. And it seems like course history doesn't have that much to factor in. I mean, obviously good course history is a plus, but you know, there's guys who have won this tournament and then missed every other cut when they've played it. So it's not the kind of course that seems to duplicate performance. So
yeah. And one more thing is it's kind of like in terms of first starters out here, rookies or someone who's never played in this tournament before, they're just as in it as anyone else, as evidenced by Xander last year. I think it's happened four times where you've had first-time winners on the course. So it really brings anyone in.
Yeah, I've even seen a couple people float the first-timer bet on the first-timer as the winner strategy, which, you know, I mean, I don't think you can draw a correlation to that, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
All right, so jumping in at the top, this is really the only sector we've got too many recognizable names in the 10 plus range. Finau is your odds on favorite coming off of his recent performances. Got Phil going, you know, he's been up and down this year. Tough to have him as the second most expensive golfer you mentioned Bubba and his experience here. Webb Simpson at 10-7. Russell Henley making a rare appearance in the 10s at 10-4. Then Xander at 10-2. So what do you like out of that group?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is kind of the names of the crew. Like I said to you before we started this, it is, you can definitely draw some comparisons to last week in terms of the field in general and the limited amount of names up top. You can expect Bubba and Phil to be here because they're Greenbrier guys and they're probably getting paid to be there. Tony Finau, he's always kind of a favorite. And as of late, I guess he's kind of deserved it with what he's been able to do week in and week out when he does play. 11-5 in terms of Tony Finau is a lot in terms of a top priced option is reasonable. It's doable, but it is Tony Finau up there. Right. And for that reason, I'm not all that interested in him this week. His past two outings at this tournament have been a T7 and a T13. He finished in fifth at the US Open. He's got a way of staying in 90% of the tournaments that he plays in over the past couple of years. He's really just, or the past year or so, really, he's always just in there. So it's like at 11-5 is when you start to question it a little bit. But again, it's like you have to stress the point that I kept talking about last week. In this kind of field, if you want the name recognition, you want the win equity, like Tony Finau, it's not even really win equity at all, but like top 10 equity, it's like he's almost always there and he can almost surely be there again. But 11-5, it all boils down to price here, possibly even ownership. Everyone else in this grouping is kind of in a similar boat. Like Russell Henley, like you said, 10-4 is just, it's a lot to ask for Russell Henley, but his tournament history is fantastic and he's been having a great season. Yeah, like well his right past now. Four starts, he's done fantastic. And then I think we could probably both agree, Webb Simpson. What do you think of Webb?
Well, I'm interested in Webb when no one else is. It's early in the week, but it seems the early indications are people are going to play Webb this week. So I don't want to count him out, but I'm not as interested in Webb this week.
Yeah, for DraftKings or FanDuel purposes, I think I'll probably be looking beyond Webb. 10-7 is just like,
yeah,
that's a price where you got to start with him and you got to move down. And I don't like having him being that first guy in my lineup.
Yep.
With that said, Bubba is a guy who I think I'm like ready to fire up. Like he's performed here. He's never done anything crazy. It's an interesting situation for him and Phil that they're kind of like the sponsory guys mm-hmm. of the week. Bubba is just like having a season.
Yeah, renaissance
he seems
here.
To be enjoying himself. It's like stress-free golf that I think can really like benefit him, especially in a tournament like this. Like he could go take this wire to wire and like no questions about right. it, and you wouldn't really blink an eye at this point in the season. But he could also do the opposite.
Yeah, he's the guy in the 10 plus range that I'm most interested in playing.
Yeah, at this point, Monday night, I feel the very same way. I've kind of been off Xander for a while, and it hurts you every once in a while, like the U.S. Open. Other than that, it's surrounded by three missed cuts. Yep. And he won last year, so like I guess he likes the course, but I can look past him, too, and then Henley, Webb.
Here's where I'm at with Price. Henley. He reminds me of Neiman last week, where you know there was a big price jump and people were like, no, not going to play him at that price. And he performed well. I mean, you know, he didn't blow the barn doors off with a tough Saturday, but you know, he's 68, 67, 74, and a 65. He had three really good rounds and he tied for 17th. So you know, I think you got your money's worth. And without that tough round, he might have been, you know, top five. So,
yeah, he was someone I was really pulling for last week. So I agree with that. And if we find out his ownership's going to be pretty low because he's Russell Henley priced at 10-4, I think the course history says enough as it is. But you start digging into his stats and over the past 24 rounds, like, he's up there across the board. Like, if one thing is struggling, it's a short game. But that's not going to be huge if he can stick these 125-yard approach shots to birdieable distance without having to gain strokes via putting. Like, he is, over the last 24 rounds, he's actually number one in proximity, 125 to 150 yards, which is going to be huge here. Yeah.
And then speaking of, Niemann kicks off the 9K range at 9,700. Are you in on him this week again?
It's like, I'm very torn on him because, like, I have become a big fan over the past month, and I want to see him do well. He actually played here last year, which is interesting because definitely nobody knew of him at that point in time, and he finished T29. Like, the dude is a ball striker. You watch videos of him just hitting tee shots. He's got this, like, controlled low ball flight that he can just hit fairways. And if he continues to do that, it's only a matter of time before he gets comfortable and starts making the putts and puts the four rounds together. Like you said, there was one round missing last week. If it weren't for Saturday, he would have been right up there, top 10, if not top five. I don't know if he was going to bring it to Molinari, but it was that Saturday that really held him back. It's just about putting four rounds together, and he's a young guy.
Yeah, I'm going to have some of them this weekend.
9-7 is reasonable in this field for what he's been doing.
So who else do you like out of those couple other names in the nines?
So Brian Harman, I looked over at first. I was like, all right, Brian Harman, no thanks. His course history is less than ideal. But you go back and look at what he's doing, and then you look at kind of how he stats out here, and he becomes a bit more enticing. Especially something I noticed was his putting. He's right up there. When you look at strokes gained on fast, actually, so I have a report in front of me, putting firm and medium bent grass greens via Fantasy National. It's a rolling report, so you get to see 4 rounds, 8 rounds, 12 rounds, 24 rounds. And he is just consistently up there on these greens. He just gains strokes left and right, long-term, short-term, everything in between. He's putting like a madman on this type of green, which is interesting because his course history sucks. He's lost strokes here total over his past 5 years. He only played here 14, 13, and 12, cut T65, T69. So he wasn't here in 15 or 17. And I think that's something to think about because he's been playing pretty good golf. And it's an interesting play, if you ask me.
Yep.
What do you think about him specifically?
Yeah, Harman. You know, I feel like he's going to have a little bit of recency bias coming off of the T6 a couple weeks ago. So that kind of concerns me a little bit. He might be primed for a letdown, but, you know, like I said, this is anybody's week. So there are very few guys I'm going to encourage a fade on.
Yeah. And he actually finished T36 at the US Open too. I remember he was right in there for a couple rounds. And that was, I think our opinion was a little less of him, at least mine was, going into the U.S. Open. And we know how tricky of a tournament that was, and he seemed to have made it out alive and then followed it up the next week at the Travelers, doing pretty well. So I think he's in good form, and I think that's probably one of the biggest things you can look at going into this tournament. Like, there will surely be some names up there that we didn't even know existed, chances are. And It's kind of a toss-up with some of these guys, like you said, but he's drawing my attention. With that said, I guess, going down, Jimmy Walker. Jimmy Walker, I've been, like, so on lately, and last week makes you not really want to think about him quite as much. Like, his past two starts have not been
right. Good. Yeah, he hurt me last week, and, you know, I don't know, I was so happy Friday when he, you know, pulled a rabbit out of the hat and made the cut. I believe he holed out from a bunker, and then, you know, didn't really do much on the weekend. Like, should I take that as a good sign? Like, he's competitive, or is it he was in such a bad place to begin with, so fade him?
Yeah, it's tough too. Like, he's been playing a lot. I guess he took the Travelers off, and that was right after the U.S. Open. So it is tough. 9,100 it's still up there in terms of price, but then you look at, like, right around him, and he does stand out. I think a logical pivot here is JB Holmes, mm-hmm. who is in a similar situation because he also largely disappointed last week. I think people were probably on him just looking at his coming off third place at the St. Jude Classic, T2 at the Travelers, and then he goes out at the National, where you think he's pretty primed to do okay, and misses the cut.
Yep.
And he was one of the only names that missed the cut there. It was like, if you had JB Holmes, you were pretty much done. Like, that lineup was dead. So, I mean, if you cut that out, his recent form is, like, fantastic. And then he's played here for the last 5 years at this course and finished top 30 every time with a top 10 last year.
And speaking of that kind of player, the next guy, Ryan Moore at 8,900, did the same thing, you know, at the Travelers. Like, he was a field favorite and got cut. So people are probably, you know, crossing his name off their list right away. How's he?
Yeah, and we saw it. He had a huge price jump heading into that round too. Like, that was like, oh wow, like Ryan Moore.
Yeah, I didn't really get him that week. Like, I understood some of the positives, but it was like he was going to be the chalk of the chalk, and it just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me either. If we're looking at his past 24 rounds, this is including the two rounds in the missed cut, I believe, or is there a reason Travelers is not included in this? I think it is. Regardless, he is number one strokes gained tee to green over the past 24 rounds in this field, which is very interesting. Number two strokes gained approach, number one ball striking, and then his short game and his scrambling drops off hugely.
Yep.
And birdie or better because he can't make putts.
Yep.
So that is like the giant question mark for him. But someone with the approach game as good as his, you would hope that like maybe he could overcome that. But you go right over to the putting.
It's risk reward. Yeah, like, for sure. Because it's that the putting can wake up any week for these guys. But if they're not putting well, it could be a disaster.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that actually might just completely scare me away from him is just you look at his putts over the last 4, 8, 12, 24, 36, 50, 100 rounds. It's never better than 50th in this field.
And then you got Danny Lee there at 8,800, and that's kind of a crazy price for him. But what we've seen this year out of Danny Lee is the courses he likes, he plays well at. And the other courses he gets cut at. He seems to like this. He's won here in the past. Has he won, or has he just got a bunch of top 20s?
He won in 2015.
He won. So, yeah, you know, he's one of the few guys with an actual record of performance here. Any interest in an 8,800 Danny Lee?
I mean, another guy who I looked right past because I saw the name.
Yeah.
But he hasn't finished worse than T16 in his last 3 years at this tournament. His past two have been a victory and a T9. And you're right. He's just completely boom or bust every outing this year. It's either cut or a top 20 or a top 15. And it's tempting. It's like you should start. I mean, if you're like multi-entering GPPs, I think it's definitely feasible. I would say it's not a bad strategy at all to try to match ownership on him if you really feel like he's someone that is just a loves the course, which we know is a thing. We've seen Bubba Watson just like go into slumps and then come out and win at a tournament that he's been known to play well at. And I think there's something to be said about that. With that said, it's Danny Lee, and I told myself I would never play him again like a year ago. So, but it is interesting. Like,
yeah, you can get low ownership.
Multi-entry standpoint, at least. Yeah, if you're set in one or two lineups, I think it's very scary, but you can't count him out here with that kind of course history.
All right, who else do you like in the eights here?
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Kevin Streelman with an ultimate bounce back and a course record tying 18 holes last week, who's seeming to be back in form. And if you ask me, this is his type of golf course. He hasn't had any outings in the past 5 years here that have been like too notable, but he is making cuts again, like he's known to do, like we love him for. And
I mean, the thing I always like about Streelman though, is he's got a home in the low sevens to mid sevens, and now he's 86. The risk is crazy. Like, everybody's pumped up this week because of the field, but I don't know. 86 Streelman gives me a little bit of heartburn.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. Like, I like to see him at 7,200.
But you look at the names around him though, and then that's that portion of a strong field up here in the eights. You know, Snedeker, Lahiri, Love Mark, like these guys are mid seven players that are now getting pumped up because of their win odds.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess one way you could look at it is from this group of people, who are you not that surprised to see them priced in the mid to high 8,000s? I would say Ryan Moore.
Keegan, he's usually up there if he's got.
Keegan in the mid eights is like a normal thing.
Yeah, he fluctuates.
Brent Snedeker at 84 seems to be about average for him.
And maybe not.
Average to high sometimes. And then Kevin Na. Yeah. Kevin Na, who is another one of those guys for me that it's completely boom or bust.
Yep.
He's just like, you don't know. He's capable of so much, but he's also capable of being like the biggest letdown you could ever imagine. So I guess we should do in this situation, we should take 85 to 9,000, choose two.
Okay. I would go Nah and probably Bradley just from a reliability standpoint, I think.
Yeah, see, I think that's a good point, like reliability, and then those two, I think, you're not going to see any ownership too crazy on there.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I think Streelman is overpriced here, so I would prefer to stay away from him. I think I would take Ryan Moore because people are going to be maybe a little scared of him, and he has played like someone who belongs to be up near like a Charles Howell, Brian Harman. I could see him being in the mid nines here. Jimmy Walker at 9,100, and then you go down to Ryan Moore at 89, who was one of our top price guys just a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
So I like Ryan Moore, and then, man, it is tough. Yeah, I'd say either. I always want to say Keegan Bradley. I guess I'll just agree with
it. It just feels like a field he could win, you know? It's not, there's not a lot of names he's got to beat out.
Yeah, it is true. He's going to be in a similar situation where he just needs to roll some putts in. He's a ball striker. He's got the approach game. If he can manage to keep the ball in the fairway, which shouldn't be hard because he should be able to even club down if he has to. It comes down to short game and putting for both Moore and Bradley, yep. But I think that's something I can deal with here.
And then you got Brian Gay down at the bottom of the tier playing like a man on fire lately. You sticking with him this week?
Yeah, you know, 8,100 is another one where it's like, okay, I have to swallow that price if I want to.
Right, he's usually like 6,900, 7,000.
Yeah. So it's really tough, but he really, really has been playing well. He couldn't quite hold on last week. His tournament history is not good. And that's the scary part here. It's like you would almost want to go up to Jamie Lovemark at 8,200, but what he did Sunday is like,
yeah,
I need to like find out what was going on there. Like,
because, did he break his putter or something?
Yeah, I honestly just have literally no clue. I was looking at shot tracker and I saw like an 8 and a 9, and there was so much going on that he was kind of the last of my concerns at that point.
Yeah.
But it was a very, very, very ugly day, and back nine especially. Shot a 45 on the back, like, but at 8,200 this week, especially, like, he was kind of chalky last week.
Yeah.
People thought he had a chance to win. It makes me not want to play him, but then you compare him to Brian Gay, and it's like, who are you getting more bang for your buck here?
Right.
And that's a kind of a toss-up.
And then the last guy in the AKs here, Kevin Kisner, has been mostly terrible this year. But and I know because I've played him. I keep trying to get in on the front end of the Kisner bounce back, and it's just dead cat bounce, like killing me. So, you know, is this a week where, you know, even for his performance, like 8K feels not that far off from where he should be priced.
Yeah. I mean, in like a lesser field, I think we're finding a theme tonight is playing the pricing game. Yeah. And
like if he weren't playing like absolute dog crap, he'd be in the nines easily.
It's true. He's not playing very well, but he has, I mean, I want to say he's had good course history. He finished tied in second 2015, but then got cut three of the other times surrounding that. So that's tough. Let me see where he's at.
I mean, you look at his metrics though, and like outside of his putting, everything is falling apart. I mean, he's at the bottom of the field in every single category. You know, it's been hard. It's been hard to watch.
He's not there. It's like, yeah, you're right. Short game is the one thing that like you kind of notice here.
Yeah.
And then woof, it's ugly. It's like over hundreds, and that's 24 rounds out. That's turning into long-term data, which is not a good look.
All right. Pass on Kisner then.
Yeah. I think if I had to steer someone in one direction or the other, I would say fade.
All right, so you ready to jump into the sevens?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Anybody you want to highlight off the bat? For me, Putnam's very interesting. For a guy who's never played here, with his recent performance, he could be a guy for me if you're going to chase that first-timer gets the win narrative.
Yes, if there was a first timer to like really look into here, I would consider him the guy here. Like, he has just been playing phenomenally. We've been on him as a podcast for multiple weeks,
yeah.
Which I love.
Yep.
It's like nobody even knew who this guy was when he was towards the top of a couple leaderboards. He hasn't quite done it yet, but like he, I'm pretty confident he's going to eventually. And he's still not getting that much chatter. It will be interesting because like you've seen his name thrown around a bit more here and there. And it's going to be a little difficult to start to find value here. But you do kind of look down into the 75 below range and you see some names that at least popped last week and like on the weekend, maybe some course history here and there. So it could be the exact price range where people kind of overlook him. And he has been playing very, very, very well. He's statting out across the board. Like the only thing that 24 rounds out, the only thing he's looking like less than average in is that proximity stat I'm looking at this week. I'm curious to see what he looks like in the past 12 rounds for the same thing. A little more short term, which we know he's had some success. Very similar. It's kind of crazy. Like he is just like greens in regulation, his par four scoring, and is driving in drive. Like he's hitting fairways. He's hitting approach shots. And then he's even getting birdies, but for some reason, I think the only thing that could maybe be skewed about this, so it's the proximity, 125 to 150 yards. He's like very, very lowly rated there. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's just not, maybe he's like 0 for 2 in like 126 yard shots or something. Like this could be a skewed stat of some sort.
Right.
And he's, other than that, though, he's like looking phenomenal. His recent play is showing it. I think he's a very interesting option here.
All right, who else in the sevens? Because it gets murky the deeper you go.
Someone I can guarantee you will not garner any ownership at all is Ryan Blom at 7,900,
uh-huh.
Who has, in his past three outings, finished no worse than T23,
yeah.
Which is kind of crazy because most people don't even know his name.
Right.
And he finished T7th here last week. So this could be another one of those like sleepers that nobody thinks about. Very interesting to me, like both him and Putnam. I think Putnam will be like possibly the chalky version of him. I hope he's not chalky. I hope, like I said, he's in that price range to kind of go.
Yeah, there'll be people on Putnam.
Yeah, I think so too. And then Ryan Armour, I think, is going to be very similar.
Yeah,
where people are going to notice him because of last week, and that makes me want to.
Right, I mean, he's fine for cash, but like that's all he's ever good for me. You know, this is going to be his kind of lone bright spot. A couple other recent performances, but he's usually just like he hovers at the cut line, typically makes it and puts in some work and, you know, calls it a tournament. Doesn't really break the 50s often.
Yeah, exactly. Like 7,700 is where it's like, oh, he finished T2 last week and now he's right. Like due to kind of regress back to where he should be. Exactly. Like I would rather put my faith in a younger guy that we know less about,
right,
that we think is like on a hot streak here and could keep it going. Like we know Ryan Armour has years of doing this. So yep. I think if there's a guy to fade here, he's probably it. I hate saying that because who knows, maybe he could win, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
And then I would drop down below that. People are going to like Ted Potter Jr. I'm not playing him.
Yeah.
I don't care. He's got phenomenal course history. He won here in 2012.
But it's like everything has to go right for Potter. Like every little thing.
Yeah. Like the Pebble Beach thing was just kind of insane. And I don't know. Like it's not worth it for me. I would much rather play Scott Piercy,
mm-hmm.
who we know can go out there on any given week and have a great tournament. So he's more of the kind of guy that you look toward in this type of tournament. Like I always compare him with, who else is it in this field that I always, Scott Piercy, the running joke of, God, I can't remember. whatever. Either way, like, he's there. He's going to do probably okay, if not better than okay, if he's the chalky option that I don't want to play him, but I don't think he will be. And when he's not chalky, I think that's the time to play him and, like, take the up 15 and, like, that's it's a, he's a, at the filler price with the top 15 filler finish there. So, like, I think he's a very interesting option here. Like, if you want to take a couple guys above him and a couple guys below him, I think he'll fit in there just nicely and you can move on, really.
Yep.
Like I said, Ted Potter not interested, and that kind of brings us to 75s, unless you're interested in anyone else in there.
The only name would be Schneider Jans, but he's had pretty up and down results of late.
Yeah, I'm off that guy. I'm like, seriously, I just feel like people know the name, the name,
same thing as some of this other guys.
Yeah, like, I always used to think of him as the iron guy who could hit the stinger and hit fairways and play consistent golf, but, like, he just doesn't do that anymore.
Right.
It's just, like, that seems to be a thing of the past, and it's, like, who knows? I want to mention Patrick Rogers. He's another guy, 78, same as Putnam, only worse performances than Putnam, but I just feel like Rogers is going to do something eventually. And I thought last week could, like, very well be that week. And then he never kind of jumped into it. It was kind of like Love Mark. Both of them were, like, there, had a chance, and then bam, like, disappeared. But I always find him a bit interesting in these less than ideal fields.
Yeah, man. Then your guy, Kevin Chappell, has been left for dead down here in the sevens in a barren field.
I know, because he's been playing so bad.
he made the cut at the Open, which is a step in the right direction.
It was not an easy cut
to
make.
No, no. I mean, anyway, I was 60 instead of 70 as well, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he's actually has decent course history here, too, but he's been playing just not good.
Yeah, I mean, there's rumors of him being injured, and he says he's not, but, you know, you fall off like this consistently week after week. It's something's up. I think it's a back or something that was rumored, but.
Yeah, I mean, I remember putting him in my lineups at Pebble Beach, like, while we're talking about Ted Potter, like, and he hasn't done anything since then. Like, he missed the cut there, I think, and then, yeah. Did you happen to see, was it Kevin Chappell on Twitter that was throwing a little shade at Tiger?
I did not see that.
I think I might have just replied to it like a jackass, but...
He kind of seems like a dick, Chappell, to me, so it wouldn't surprise me.
It was a little something like club twirl after a missed fairway with an iron. Can someone explain that to me? And someone was like,
have you made a cut lately, dude?
Okay, he goes, yeah. I do not understand the missed fairway with an iron club twirl. And someone said only 104 more worldwide wins, and you can do the same thing, Kevin. And he goes, oh, I can do that right now. I just don't understand it. Instead of trying to insult me, why don't you just explain it to me?
I just did. You're bad at golf.
Yeah, I think what I said was maybe it's because Tiger is accustomed to what did I say? It's because that's what Tiger does. He's used to being great, and when you're used to being great, you are gonna club twirl after every shot. Even if you do miss the fairway, and guess what? He finished in the top 10. So,
right.
Kevin Chappell, where were you at?
Yep. A couple other names down here. Answer at 7,300 off of the performance he put in last week is going to be, I would think, mega chalky. You know, you're going to have to get some guys in the mid sevens to make the names you want to play work. I don't know. Chalky Answer is scary to me. I mean, I like what he did last week. Yeah. I like him as a golfer. Just inconsistent.
A chalky answer is very scary to me. I actually, like, he is, like, the go-to first-round leader bet because he just, like, loves the third. Like, Thursday, he goes out there, and you see him on the leaderboard. Like, Abraham Answer is someone who's at 73 after, like, being in the final pairing last week, and which is, I mean, that is reason to play him. Like, he's playing good. But the thing is, you know his name because he's always on the leaderboard for a little bit, and then he disappears. Like,
yep.
Saturday night, I was saying to someone I was with, like, I think someone was asking where Tiger was, and I was like, oh, he's like six back. But if you look at the names above him, like, it's like Andrew Putnam, Abraham Answer, Ryan Armour, whoever else it was, and it was like, these are all guys that are not going to do what it takes on Sunday. And that is why I think he's still 7,300. But with that said, he showed some confidence there. And 7,300 in this field, you'd be happy with a top 25. Right. So it's very interesting. He's played this tournament. No, sorry, he has not played this tournament. Johnson Wagner, just below him, has played this tournament 5 years in a row. Abraham Answer is definitely interesting. Joel Dahmen, also 7,500.
Yeah, I'm going to throw Dahmen in a lineup, throw a little love to his calling out of Sung Kang.
Yeah, like, I'm going to have to make, like, a Neiman, Dahmen, Brian Gay, Johnson Wagner, Abraham Answer lineup. Like just these guys that I play in the shitty right. tournaments.
Hey, Johnson Wagner, man, I threw him in the sheet last week, and he was better through Friday. He had not a rough weekend, but didn't really gain any ground while everybody else was. But I used him in a one and done, and you know, you get a made cut with Johnson Wagner, you're happy, and T41, okay.
Yeah, and he finished T2 here in 2013, and then followed that up with a T26 and a T32. Like, he knows and likes the course, so 7,300, he's another guy. At this point, I think I'd probably play him over Abraham Answer, because I think Answer might get some name recognition from last week combined with what I was just saying, which is pretty interesting. And then you've actually got Bill Haas and Brandon Harkins both right below him, who I think people will notice down there, especially Bill Haas.
Yep.
Just being 7,200 in this field is...
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to make Bill Haas happen all season, and then I finally gave up on him. You know, he goes T14th at the Fort Worth. I think I got back on him the next week, and, you know, T57th. The Open, he was okay. I didn't really play him at the Open. But since then, not those same results. So I think this is just going to be a lost season.
He has not been the same. He hasn't been the same since the whole car accident thing. I think that was that Pebble Beach or was that?
It was, I think it was Genesis. It was a West Coast swing.
Okay. Yeah. So he hasn't been the same there. With that said, he's got some pretty decent course history here, and he is like a name in this sea of very cheap, like, underperformers. So it's interesting in that sense, but I do think, like, the public will kind of pick up on that probably. Uh-huh. So he might have some ownership because of that, and you might be gaining an advantage by not playing him. And then, you know, I think I'll just quickly mention four names below 7,200 that I will be looking at. Again, it is Monday night, so we've got some digging to do. But this is largely based on my recent perception of these players, a little bit of last week, and then maybe a little bit of course history. Brandon Harkins, who was like the next filler, was like him and Siwoo Kim and Ryan Armour last week that I ended up on as like my cheap options. Harkins and armor surpassed expectations. It was awesome. Harkins just barely squeaked by, and then he had an awesome Saturday, and then kind of like a so-so Sunday. Mm-hmm. So Harkins, I think, is another guy that people are probably going to notice at 7,100. His price barely moved, which is interesting, but the guy's got talent. He can be back and forth. Going down from there, Tyler Duncan is someone who I've actually mentioned a lot, who I think is going largely under the radar, but doing similar things as kind of like a Brandon Harkins, more of like very recent than Harkins has kind of been there for like a little longer now. So he's at least catching my attention again, like nothing much past like the top 30, but I think the guy's got some talent. Robert Streb has just absurd course history, but he's been playing like absolute crap.
Yeah. Again. I mean, in these small fields, we keep seeing these guys, the Ling Murths, who was it at the RBC, the British guy? What's his name?
Oh, I'm getting everything mixed up.
Shoot. Forget his name. But, you know, he hasn't been in contention in the PGA for years and years. And this is the one course he's good at. And, of course, everyone plays him. He's chalk, and he missed the cut as well. So, you know, sometimes these things pan out. But, like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, I, you can, like I said last week, like you say every week, you can probably cut off 15% of the field by fading a $7,000 priced yep. Robert Streb here. And you're going to cut a bunch of people out or who are looking at these stats going, the past two outings at the Greenbrier, second, tied second. Yep. That must mean something. Let's look at what he's been doing lately. Yeah. Nothing. He's been missing a lot of cuts. And then a little deeper down, Sam Ryder at 6,800 is another guy who he keeps catching my attention week in and week out. And I think he could be on the verge of something too. I think, and not very many people talk about him.
Mm-hmm. Any love for Corey Connors?
Corey Connors, I always have love for. He's another one of those guys down there that I think will probably
yeah, like. I feel like he should have gotten you know a bump at least to the mid sevens. Like that's where most of the other people that are in that range are located this tournament.
Yeah, it's funny because he's another one of those guys that fits perfectly in with Kevin Streelman, with Ryan Moore. Who else were we just talking about? Even Neiman. Domin, with everything is like spot on except for the short game.
Mm-hmm.
And if the short game proves to like not be quite as important this week, some of these guys could really, really have some success. Like Brian Gay is actually kind of similar in that respect. Andrew Putnam was like right. No, Andrew Putnam is just. He's just good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like Neiman, Moore, Connors. It's going to be something that's like actually very interesting to watch to see how it turns out. Maybe take some notes for next year. But I wouldn't count him out here. I'm largely on the Corey Connors train as I am with Domin and Neiman. Probably put him in number three in terms of rising stars in my book. Right.
So let's wrap up with a couple one-and-done picks. I'm going to go ahead and steal Bubba because he should just kick the crap out of this field. And if somehow you have Bubba left, this is a great week to use him in just a boring field.
Yeah, he stands out in the field. It's very true. I think someone like Finau can kind of perform in other crowds. Xander, we saw him do well in the playoffs last year. I would go with Russell Henley this week in terms of a one and done. I think that's a great play with his tournament history, his recent form. Everything kind of adds up, and I think this is like the perfect tournament to kind of see him do something. I don't love its DraftKings price, but like as we talk through it tonight, I think I'll probably be having a piece of that.
Yeah, and then for a cheaper guy, I like Putnam and I like Keegan. I'd probably go Keegan in a one-and-done situation where you're, you know, you probably want to get a name in there rather than somebody who's a little less at the top of the board.
Yeah, I think in terms of a cheaper person, Brian Gay.
I can dig that.
I think you gotta take him while he's hot, and he's hot right now. Another person we actually didn't mention is Anirban Lahiri, who he's been like on a bit of a streak lately. He's another, this is his first outing here, but like his recent play has been very good. He was another one who kind of fell back on Saturday and then surged again on Sunday. He's kind of someone you see and then he disappears, but he almost did it last week. Like, he almost put them together, and again, not very much talked about. Actually, this week in DraftKings too, like, his price isn't all that bad at 8,300 in comparison.
Yeah. All right, guys, that's what we got time for today. Alex, thanks for allowing me back into the pod this week.
It's my pleasure. It's great to have you back, and hopefully things will get a little more interesting and fields will get a little more fun to follow in coming weeks. Actually, I can guarantee you they will.
All right, guys. Build some lineups. Get at us in Slack. Follow on Patreon if you aren't yet. And may the sports be with you.
Yes, sir. Holiday weekend, so I'll be all over there. Good luck.